Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
There are days like today where I am just too busy to get outside and go feed myself. And that's where DoorDash comes in. It's super convenient, and they bring the food to me. Also, I don't like paying delivery fees, so I have DashPass. DashPass is an exclusive membership from DoorDash that gets you unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders and members-only deals and discounts, all for only $9.99 a month. DashPass actually pays for itself in 2 orders on average. DashPass makes it easy to save at restaurants, grocery stores, and all your local favorites. Open the door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. Sign up for DashPass today only on DoorDash and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change, terms apply. From Wondery. How you doing tonight, Aaron?
Hey, what's up, Justin? I'm doing fine. How about you?
I'm doing okay. I saw a movie last week.
Let me guess, you saw Joker.
Yes, I did. I had very high expectations. I mean, with Heath Ledger and the Christopher Nolan one, you got to deliver that character, right? I'm actually not the biggest fan of comic book movies. I like realism. I like gritty, raw character development. And so most comic book movies are just action movies. So you're just being shoved through a plot and a storyline, and you're just fed one-liners.
You are not a big fan of CGI. So you like movies like Doom Patrol, right?
I hate CGI. You know, when I think of Game of Thrones, the CGI is mostly background, landscapes. And I'm okay with that because you don't notice that. But when it's a person, we digress. Sorry to keep this going, but the Joker probably now in my top 5 all-time favorite movies. I liked it that much, and I'm not a fan of comic book movies.
A lot of them seem to have the same beats. I don't know. I tire of them. I mean, it was just such a strong performance by Joaquin Phoenix.
I actually had a extreme emotional reaction to the movie. His performance was actually very reminiscent of my brother, who suffered from schizophrenia and a whole litany of other things like Tourette's. He behaved in a very similar way as Joaquin Phoenix did on screen. The mother and the Joker, I don't want to give any spoilers, but it reminded me of my own mother. So it was a little triggering for me, but that relatable emotional attachment is what I bonded with. And then I saw nods to Taxi Driver. I saw nods to Broadcast News. I saw nods to all those old 70s and 80s classic movies, you know, those cult classics, when they actually cared about character and less about story. This movie, I truly feel, is a huge nod to those old school movies.
It's really a character piece.
Exactly. And that's why I loved it. I mean, it did have a story, but the story wasn't exactly the point.
Yeah, you know, a lot of movies, the characters are pretty two-dimensional. In this one, it felt like there was a lot more behind the faces, yeah. A lot more going on, and a lot less dialogue was needed. I wanted to see this Joker movie primarily because I had seen Joaquin in a movie on Amazon Prime titled You Were Never Really Here, which I thought was pretty awesome. The Joker is such an iconic character. It was amazing to see him bring him to life, but film for film, I kind of like You Were Never Really Here better. But it's really just a testament to Joaquin's performances. This guy's only gotten better, and I can't wait to see what he does next.
Absolutely. Well, apologies for the lengthy movie review. You guys know that we normally just get to the episode, but this was a movie that we wanted to talk about.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
So, tonight's case is about a man and woman who are happily married, life's looking up, husband's getting a job across the country, they're uprooting their lives to this bright future, and they're in the process of moving when the wife goes jogging one morning and disappears. So, what are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
Tonight we're talking about the case of Lori Hacking. Lori K. Soares was born on December 31st, 1976 in Los Angeles, California. Lori's maiden name, Soares. She was adopted by Thelma and Harold Soares. Her parents had met in Brazil and then relocated to Orem, Utah. This case takes place in Salt Lake City, Utah. Mark Douglas Hacking was born in 1976. Her husband was Mark. What do we know about how they met?
Well, back in high school, it's said that Mark Hacking was, I don't know if class clown is the right term, but he was always the attention seeker. He was always the show off. And they were out on a camping trip together. Might have been a school field trip. I'm not sure if it was sanctioned by the school or not. Mark wanted to stir the fire. And instead of getting a stick and moving a log, he reached in and grabbed a burning log to flip it over. And of course, this burned his hands. But this was more or less part of his showing off, hey, I'm not afraid of fire. Then he ends up severely injuring himself. And Lori always had this interest in caring for others and even some medical background interests. She was the one that treated his burns on his hands. That's how they met. But I guess they didn't get together right away. It was shortly after that that they would come together and start dating.
As far as we can tell, this is a very good marriage. They got married in 1999. Both families like their new in-laws, right?
Yeah, they get along. Her family loves Mark. He does all kinds of stuff for him. He's really helpful.
We're going to fast forward here. Mark has this amazing reputation. He has graduated from university. His wife works for Wells Fargo Security Services. Everything's going really well, but they're ready to take that next step. It's about this time that Lori discovers that she's pregnant and she's 5 weeks along. They're planning to move to North Carolina, to Chapel Hill. Her husband, Mark, has enrolled in medical school. He wants to get into oncology.
Yeah, and this medical school that he has been accepted into is in North Carolina. So across the country, this is uprooting your life and moving for this dream.
But it's worth it because if he does become an oncologist, that's pretty good money, and he's fulfilling another dream. His first dream was obviously marrying Lori.
And currently, he's working a lot of entry-level jobs because he's going to school. So he doesn't have a lot of time to focus on a career position. So he's working, I won't say menial jobs, but just jobs within the medical field that are part-time or whatnot, so he can focus on his schooling.
You know, it's this education that really shows how close they were, because Mark would need help with a term paper or something, and he could just go to Lori and say, hey, got a couple of things, could you help me with it? And they would sit down and work on it together. She would help him out. It's really just a marriage where they both put in the time. They both put in the effort. They both wanted to spend time with each other. And of course, like you said, he would go over to her family's house and help out. Even at Christmas time, he would show up and help put up the tree, and he would spend time talking with her mom, Thelma. So, man, this is ideal. How could this be a case connected to any kind of crime?
Yeah. And Mark's family was all of high stature. They were all in the medical fields. They all were very successful people. He's come from a good family. So is Lori. This is just destined for success.
July 15th, 2004. Lori has informed her work that she is moving away, and she has put in her notice. They threw her a going away party. This is at Wells Fargo Security Services. The party went well, but it was just one day later when something happened that was totally out of the ordinary. Lori got a phone call. She became very, very upset. Well, after the phone call, she hung up and she got up, and a coworker asked her if she was okay. According to news reports, she said, I'm okay, but I think I'm going to go home. They could just tell something really upsetting had happened because she was in tears.
On Monday, July 19th, this is 2004, at 10:49 a.m., Mark Hacking places a call to 911, and he reports that his wife is missing. He told the dispatcher that Lori went for her usual morning jog earlier in the day, and she had not returned home. She had not made it to work, and her car was nowhere to be found. He's concerned, and the 911 dispatcher is now getting police dispatch to help search for his wife and help create a police report.
She went missing. Her husband, Mark, said that she had gone for a run. There was a witness who said that they thought they saw her at Memory Grove Park between 5:30 and 6 in the morning. So that sounds like she's confirming it. But then later, she said that she didn't really get a good look at the jogger, so she couldn't say it was Lori or even that she thought it was.
Mark is in full search for my wife mode, and he is calling family members, asking them, have you seen her? Is she over there? She calls up Lori's mom, Thelma, and tells her Lori's missing. Mark goes out and starts searching for his wife, starts driving around and asking passerbyers, have you seen my wife?
And it's not an organized effort on his part. There are people who are organizing to search, but apparently Mark is either distraught or who knows what he's going through, but he is just sort of going around randomly trying to find his wife.
Yeah.
Maybe he's just really upset.
Well, I mean, your wife's missing. You're going to go look for her. He doesn't know where she went missing. He doesn't know what happened. He thinks that she's been abducted. He doesn't know. So he's out there. He's looking. The police go to Memory Grove Park, and they find her vehicle. parked. And they think she made it to the park, but she never left. And that's kind of scary because this is showing that there might be foul play. Investigators tell Mark, hey, we need to come back to your apartment and interview you, see if there's anything that we can find that might give us a hint of what's going on. And Mark agrees. Kelly Kent, the lead investigator, and her deputies go to his apartment. The apartment is in disarray because they're in the middle of moving. So there's boxes, there's things being packed up, there's just stuff everywhere. Obviously, they're moving. They come across Lori's purse and they think, well, why wouldn't she take her purse with her to the park for her jog? Her driver's license is in the purse.
The way I understand it, because I'm not a runner, but a lot of runners don't take their wallet or their purse with them. But you would think they would bring their ID, especially if they're driving somewhere. They would need that. It does not make sense, even though on the face of it, it should, because, well, if you're running, you're not going to carry your purse with you.
I agree, because I actually do run. And for a while, I was driving to a park to run. And either A, I would leave my wallet in my car, or I would just put my ID and a little sleeve in the back of my cell phone, which I had with me while I ran. So I could see leaving your purse behind. But in her purse were her car keys.
Huh?
Maybe there's a spare set of keys. Who knows? So at this point, the investigators, they're kind of thinking, well, tell us everything you know about the morning, Mark. And he's telling them about how he's out searching for his wife. He's telling them about how he's so upset. He's going through every step of his morning. They're saying, okay, well, we're going to get a search party together and we're going to start searching the park area. They get a whole organization. They set up tents. They have, I think it was upwards to 100 searchers, volunteers, family members, friends, the community is coming together to search this park. But the lead investigator, Kelly, she smells something and it stinks. The purse really bothers her. So at this point, they ask Mark for a consensual search agreement, something like that, where they're like, we're going to search your stuff, but it's not a search warrant. It's like, we're going to search it. Are you cool with that? And he signed it, said yes. Kelly looks around the apartment. She sees a huge bouquet of flowers. Now, this isn't a, hey, honey, I thought I would just buy you a flowers, just tell you I love you. This is a huge, nice gift, like a big, I'm sorry I screwed up kind of gift.
Or, it's the intuition.
Yeah, that's her thing. And I mean, maybe it was an anniversary, maybe it was something, but Kelly's thinking, no. So the detective, again, not really feeling it. She goes over and she looks at the bed. She notices the sheets are brand spanking new, meaning they were just pulled out of a package, still had the creases from the packaging. Now, I'm a dude. I would do this. I wouldn't wash them to get the creases out. But why are there new sheets on the bed? Maybe it was laundry day.
It's really weird because if your wife is missing and you have new sheets on the bed, that's not a good sign. Not a good look.
Not a good look. There's other things in the apartment that kind of tip them off that there's something wrong. The bathtub is spotless and they smell the hint of bleach.
Hint of bleach. You know, bleach has such a strong odor. If you use that, you'll detect it for a while. At least if you're using it properly. Like if you're cleaning up blood.
And so she turns to Mark and says, can we search your vehicle while we're at it? And he's like, yeah, sure. It's parked right across the street. And he drives an SUV.
He's being very, very cooperative here, though. Give him credit. It's not like he's saying, go get a search warrant. He's like, go ahead. Take a look. Go look around.
So they open up his vehicle. Right smack on the passenger seat, there's a receipt from a mattress store, and it's time stamped from the morning that he was supposed to be out searching for his missing wife. So he bought a new mattress.
More than that, it's time stamped at about the time he had called in to report her missing.
Hmm.
Which is weird because it makes you wonder if he just called from the mattress store to report his wife missing and he's there to buy a new mattress.
Yeah. So the lead detective picks up the receipt. The deputy's standing right next to her and they turn to Mark and they say, "Would you mind explaining why you bought a new mattress?" I think Mark gives a explanation of, well, Lori was menstruating and she ruined the mattress, so I needed to buy a new one. Before I get into all the problems with that explanation, the lead detective, Kent, says, "Are you kidding me?" And Mark says, "You don't think I hurt my wife, do you?" And the lead detective comes back with, "No, I don't think you did. I know you did. I'm going to get you for it," essentially. Something to that effect. Which, I'm all about her brazen attitude. I actually love it. But at the same time, I think it might have been a little premature, because if you're telling the husband, "We're targeting you now," it does give him time to possibly go destroy more evidence before you get an official search warrant. I don't know.
Kelly Kent has done some interviews on this. In fact, Oxygen has a lie to die for if you want to see her talking about this. It's pretty amazing, but this is what we like. So often we're covering a case and there's an investigator or investigators who just can't seem to get a case put together. They're lost. And I know this so far sounds like there's a lot of stuff just popping, but damn, not only is she paying attention to everything, but she's letting him know he's not getting away with anything. She knows what happened. She already knows. When investigators spoke with family members, the Hackings and the Sorases, we're talking both sides of the families, they had nothing but praise for this couple, for both people, for Lori and for Mark. Good reputations. This isn't like, oh, the guy, everyone kind of knew he was a dirtbag or he had some addiction issues and he was gone all night. No, this was a guy who everyone had good things to say about. So for her to look at him and say, "I know you did this," it's still a surprise. This isn't the kind of guy you would think would be involved in his wife's disappearance. There's more to this story.
I give her credit. I mean, one, she doesn't know Mark from anybody. She's just looking at the evidence. She's not muddied with the filter of, "I've known this guy all my life and he could never hurt a fly." She just met him.
Right. And it wasn't like, oh, the husband did it.
No.
Like you said, she's paying attention to what he's saying and what they're finding in the house and in the car. And they're thinking,
Well, they've caught him in a lie now, which allows them to get an official search warrant for his apartment. I guess Mark goes and stays at a hotel because he can't really go back into his apartment now.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails, feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out. Now they find a lot more. They find blood droplets. They find a hunting knife that appears to have blood on it. They find a letter that Lori has written to Mark.
It may have been typed up, but essentially it's a letter that is letting Mark know that their future is in trouble and that things have to change in a big way for them to remain together. It sounds like an ultimatum letter.
Well, and this keys off the investigators to some things that Mark has been lying about, much about his previous college experience at the University of Utah, and then the medical school he's supposed to be moving across country to and attending. Turns out that Lori was calling the medical school for financial aid purposes, and they said, he's not enrolled here.
Yeah, she was also trying to get lodging. She wanted to be able to live on campus, as it were, so that he could easily attend. She was trying to make these arrangements. And that's what this call was on the 16th of July, 2004, is they were informing her, Mark Hacking is not enrolled in a program here.
When she first went online and called, they said he wasn't enrolled. She asked him about that, and he said, oh, it must have just been a computer glitch. You know, it takes time to update, blah, blah, blah. But then that phone call was, no, there's no computer glitch. He is not enrolled here. And that's why she left work early, very upset. And this is why she wrote this letter to him, because she has quit her job. She has started to uproot her entire life, all based on lies.
And she's pregnant with his child.
So with that, go back to the mattress. He had purchased a mattress from the Bradley Sleep Store that morning when he was supposed to be out searching for his wife. He says she menstruated and there was blood on the mattress. She's been pregnant over 5 weeks. So what?
Yeah, so he's going to change out a mattress on the very day he's calling to report his wife missing.
And he's moving. So if this mattress was so soiled by blood from his wife, well, wouldn't you just throw it out and then buy a new one there? Why would you lug a brand new mattress across the country? Why wouldn't you just deal with the current mattress until the move, throw it out, and then buy new once you get there?
Or better yet, why replace a mattress if your wife is missing and you don't even know if you're still moving to North Carolina? Because if something bad has happened, you might be sticking around Utah for a while.
Exactly. So this whole buying of this mattress was just ridiculous. They go and check the apartment dumpster that they lived at, and all they find are wrappings or packaging for his new pillowcases and the new mattress he owns. But they can't find his old mattress. And they notice that he still has his old box spring under the mattress. So it's mismatched, which, hey, I'm a dude. I'd just buy a new mattress and not a box spring, but that's just me. But the lead investigator, Kelly, knows that this old mattress has been disposed of. So she asks her captain or whoever is in charge. She's like, we need to shut down all of the garbage pickups in this area. She turns to Mark and says, when is trash day here? And Mark gives a very odd response. He says, well, this grid gets cleared on Mondays. This grid. If I asked you what day is trash day, Aaron, what kind of response would you give me?
Well, I can tell you for certain, and I think I speak for most people, that my response would not include the word grid. Grid is a term that is for someone who is responsible for organizing trash pickup, probably, right?
Yeah, it's a waste disposal industry term.
Right. And if you're not in that, why would that word even come out of your mouth? You know, they would say that's a tell.
Yeah, it's a huge tell. And now the investigator is trying to get it all shut down. But of course, the powers that be are like, you know how much of a pain in the butt that is and how much that's going to cost. But they drive to Mark's, I guess it's the worship house. It's where their church is.
They were part of the LDS church, were they not?
Yes, they were Mormon.
Because they were married in an LDS church.
Absolutely. So this is a dumpster that's behind the administration buildings. Guess what they find, Aaron?
Do tell.
It would be a mattress that is tan or beige in color, which matches the box spring of Mark Hacking. The top of the mattress has been cut off with what appears to be a jagged knife. I'm wondering why somebody would cut off the top of a mattress.
So the mattress they find, they feel they can match it to the box spring that belonged to Mark and Lori Hacking. And then the bloody knife that they had seems like it was probably used to cut the top of the mattress off, what they call the pillow top.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward investigative work here. They have taken Lori's car into custody, and they're analyzing it. They're finding blood droplets in the back seat. It will come back that this blood belongs to Lori. The blood on the knife and the blood droplets in the apartment will all come back as Lori's.
There was this search for Lori in the areas where she might have been. We're talking about the park area primarily, but still, at one time, it was said that they reached up to about 1,200 people who were looking for Lori. That's a hell of an effort. I think, sadly, what happened was over time, because of the evidence that was being collected and what they were finding, I think people started to realize that they weren't looking to find Lori. They were looking to find her remains.
Yeah. This is just over the course of a few days. But on July 20th, Mark Hacking is found running around naked in the streets, wearing only sandals.
People report that there's a man running around naked. The police show up, and he seems distraught or something. They call one of his brothers, and he comes to help get Mark somewhere. Mark is actually requesting to go to the psychiatric hospital.
And he's actually demanding to be evaluated.
He wants help, apparently. Now, the police are looking at him and thinking, here you go. You're setting up your defense.
Yeah.
Because we're on to you. But again, we can't stress this enough. His family is probably just wonderful people. I mean, they're going to be there for him no matter what's happened. And his brother gets him to the hospital. His other brothers show up as well. They're there for him. And he's obviously going through something. They know the stress of what's happening because he's being accused of murdering his wife. He's obviously lost it if he's running around naked. But again, the police aren't buying it because of what?
Well, they said he had the wherewithal to wear sandals to protect his feet.
Because he's just running around the street.
Yeah.
And you know how it is. If you're running around the street,
you might cut your feet open.
You might. Or you step on rocks. It's not comfortable, but.
So a crazy mental breakdown, but I'm still going to protect my feet. Who knows? We all break down in different ways, but the cops aren't buying it. The search for Lori is pretty much called off at this point.
It's winding down. I mean, they lost probably, 90% of the volunteers. It's winding down because I think what the thought is they're going to start interviewing Mark. They're going to try and get the truth out of him. Because at this point, it feels like a wasted effort right now. They haven't found enough. They haven't found Lori. So they're going to concentrate on this person of interest or this suspect. Mark's family have hired a lawyer to represent him, a guy that apparently has a very good reputation as an attorney by the name of Gilbert Athey.
His defense attorney, Gilbert, confirms that Mark has never graduated from the University of Utah and confirms that he was not accepted or even applied to medical school in North Carolina.
He dropped out of college in 2002. So for, I guess that would be a couple of years, he was carrying on a lie. As they put this thing together, they find out that he would leave the house as if he's going to school. And then after his wife left to go to work, he would return home and basically play video games on a Nintendo console.
That was his day. He does have a friend named Paul who came forward and says that he hung out with Mark a lot of the time when he was supposed to be in college, when he was supposed to be getting his schooling. Paul and Mark's family describe how Mark went around the country applying at different medical schools, and he had applications drawn up, all this stuff to apply to all these different schools, and it was all a lie. Lori had spoken with her family about how she had helped Mark write research papers when he was in university. All this is now coming together, and the families are thinking, something's not right here. And that's why Mark's brothers are going to the hospital and saying, you need to tell us what's actually happening.
Well, it turns out Mark does have something to say, and he decides to come clean to his brothers about what happened to Lori. According to Mark, they had an argument. She ended up going to bed, and he played video games. And then, I guess in the course of the evening, came across his .22 rifle. He shot Lori while she was sleeping. She didn't know anything. She went to bed, shot in her sleep. This is his word.
This is all we have to go on, really.
The police don't have her remains, so they don't have any proof yet of how this went down, just what Mark is saying. And he's telling this to his brothers, who of course are saying, you need to tell the authorities.
That was on July 24th. And now they have somewhat of a semblance of the accounts of the night and the day after. They're putting it together. They find security footage of Mark going to a convenience store and buying cigarettes that day. And in the security footage, you see him checking his hands. You can only assume that he's looking for maybe blood droplets or something on his hands. They find security footage of a person dumping a body in a dumpster behind the hospital where Mark worked. They can't really make it out that it's him, but it's a silhouette, and it's obviously a body that's been wrapped in something being put in the dumpster. They also have the mattress that's been dumped at his church. So they know that he's throwing away all the evidence and he's thrown away his wife like a piece of trash.
And apparently thrown away the rifle.
Yeah.
Because that wasn't around anymore. The authorities are told about this confession on July 25th of 2004.
And they transfer him from the psychiatric hospital he's at to a holding cell. And that's when he's officially arrested and booked.
I believe that was August 2nd.
Now that they know that she was dumped in a trash can, essentially. They switch their search to the local landfill, which is massive. But the cool thing about landfills is they keep track of the scheduled dumps and what area they happen in, because it's actually a very scientific process. So all these trucks dump in this one coordinate, and then they have the big roller construction vehicles flatten it out. They dump again, they compress it, and then they put a layer of clay or dirt on top when it's all said and done.
They're essentially grids.
Yeah. And they know what area she was put in. But that doesn't mean that it's going to be easy to find her, because it's over 10 acres and she could be 40 feet down.
Mark had told the authorities where he had placed her. Obviously, she ended up in the landfill. It's more than they had before, but it's no guarantee they're going to find her remains. And so it's very upsetting. Lori's mother said it really disturbed her because she thought, he killed my daughter, and then he dumped her in the trash. So it's insult to injury at this point. And I think the way she described it was like the feeling when she was told that her daughter was murdered. It was that feeling all over again, in addition to that, because of what he had done to her. He had put her in the trash.
Now, the police have enough to formally charge him with aggravated murder, with or without the body. They have a confession. They have all this evidence. But still, when you don't have a body, it's really, really hard to get a conviction. But they have all their other boxes checked, so they're going through with this.
The prosecutor said they were filing a probable cause statement. This was an amended one, because they could only hold him 72 hours before charging or releasing him, and they wanted to keep Mark Hacking in custody while they searched for Lori's remains, because they really wanted some extra time to get those remains so they could bring this case home.
Now, to search a landfill, it's equivalent to searching through the most disgusting, harsh environment you could ever imagine. They have to get construction vehicles and bulldozers to scrape off that top layer of soil, which is keeping all of the trash compressed underneath it. And when they do that, all the waste starts to expand. And then they bring in the cadaver dogs and tons of searchers who are having to wear steel boots and like hazmat suits and stuff. Could be hazardous waste here. And they search the top layer, look for whatever. Dogs don't hit on anything. Bulldozers come in, scrape off that layer. They do the next, and they do the next. And it takes them 33 days before they find anything.
They estimated that they had gone through 4,600 tons of garbage before they found something related to this case.
That's insane. It's just a testament to all of these volunteers. It's a testament to just the drive that these investigators and this police department have to bring closure to this family. They're religious. They're Mormon. They want to bury their family member, their daughter, their loved one. I'm sure this excavation cost a lot of money, but they did it.
They didn't find every bit of Lori's remains. The problem was, is with what they found, they're not able to really disprove or counter what Marcus said about how he murdered her, or even whether she was pregnant. But they have her remains, so they know she was murdered. And the medical examiner was able to confirm this is Lori.
So the prosecution has confession. They have every single bit of evidence you could ever want in a case.
Except for the murder weapon.
Yeah, they don't have the murder weapon.
But they have everything else.
Yeah, and now they have technically a body. They are thinking about the death penalty for this case, which according to Mark, kind of was premeditated. And he comes across his .22 rifle. They've been fighting all night. He comes over and shoots her in her sleep. I think you're checking the boxes off here.
True, they're looking at the death penalty, but when they're having hearings, they're putting him in a bulletproof vest. I guess they're worried that someone might take action and take him out. And because he had that incident where he was running around naked, his attorney was expected to say, hey, I want him evaluated to see if he's fit to stand trial.
Of course, being deemed incompetent for trial is not what people think it is. One, they never do it. Two, if you're deemed incompetent to stand trial, you don't go off to a psychiatric hospital. No, you get therapy. You get mental health professionals treating you until you are competent to stand trial. In Mark's case, that doesn't even go that far.
But, and this is something that Lori's mother even brings up later, is that Mark had fallen when he was about 19 or 20 from a roof. He used to work on houses and things like that. You say he was good with his hands. Well, he fell from this roof and he hit his head. I think he was laid up for maybe close to a month after that. So there was this concern or this thought that maybe that injury had some sort of effect on him. I guess you could say they're looking at it as maybe there's some sort of a factor here that we could use to say, well, it's not really Mark's fault, a mitigating factor.
Now, the body wasn't found until later, but the trial's beginning. On October 30th, 2004, his lawyers enter a plea of not guilty to one count of first-degree murder and three second-degree felony counts of obstruction of justice. Not guilty? Okay.
Yeah, that's...
wishful thinking?
It's very difficult to understand. But in 2005, April 15th, Mark Hacking was in court once again. He was pleading guilty to the murder charge, but this plea would involve the prosecution dropping the obstruction of justice charges.
Which entails them dropping the capital murder charge because it's a whole, you commit a felony in the commission of a murder, blah, blah, blah. Then you get the capital murder charge. So they drop these other charges. He pleads guilty to first degree murder. Now he's looking at a life sentence as opposed to the death penalty.
So now he confesses to the court. And his quote is, "Your Honor, I intentionally shot Lori Hacking in the head with a .22 rifle on the night of July 19th, 2004. Mark doesn't seem shaken here. He's dressed. It seems like this case is getting closed. They don't even need a trial. Lori's mother, Thelma, she has questions because she knew Mark. I mean, she knew him for what, like 10 years or more? She doesn't understand why he would have done this. When she was first told that Mark had killed her daughter, she just couldn't believe it because they had spent a lot of time together. She knew him. He wouldn't do such a thing. In fact, he went out of his way to help people. She wants to be able to talk with Mark. She wants to get answers. Now, the prosecution is saying, okay, he pled guilty, but we're going to try and get him as much time in prison as we can get.
Which is weird when you hear this sentence, because this is just a weird legal technicality. Obviously, he's pleaded guilty, and they sentence him to 6 years to life. He's not going to be eligible for parole for like over 30 years. But when you hear that sentence, 6 years to life, it gives you pause, because you think, well, what happens after 6 years? Could he get out?
But the thing was, is it's up to the parole board. When they were asked about it, what their reaction was, no way, we're not going to let him out at 6 years. And so that's where the longer term comes in. Even though it's a minimum of six, they correct everyone, say, hey, don't worry, he won't be eligible till about three decades down the road. Let's talk about some of the things that were said at this hearing. Mark apparently was showing emotion. He said, I killed her and my unborn child. I put them in the garbage. I can't explain why I did it. I know I wasn't myself that night, but that's no excuse. I am tormented every waking minute by what I have done. I deserve to be in prison, probably for the rest of my life. Lori's mother, Thelma Soares, said, and this is her crying this out. This is her looking at Mark. She said, "How could you do that, Mark? How could you do that to me?" And Mark replied, "I'm sorry." So the parole board, they actually gave a year of when they would first consider him for parole. And what year was that?
2035.
That sounds more appropriate than 6 years.
True, but it still gives everyone pause when you hear that sentence.
Now, Harold, who was Lori's father, he pushed for a law. For a minimum in a case like this, 6 years is ridiculous. So the law, which became known as Lori's Law, set a new minimum, which would be 15 years.
So they wouldn't ever say 6 to life. It would be 15 to life.
Which I think is much more reasonable. But it's just sad that it takes a case like this for a law to be created like that. This seems like common sense.
I mean, for a first-degree murder charge, there shouldn't be a minimum of 6. That just seems ridiculous. The judges and the lawmakers, they all say it's just a technicality and who cares, but it's a public perception issue.
Absolutely. So you lose a family member to murder, and the murderer could get out, conceivably, in 6 years. That doesn't sit right with anyone, I guarantee it. Except for the murderer, of course.
Yeah.
Lori's Law was known as House Bill 102, and it was signed into law on March 20th, 2006.
The Soares family had Lori's headstone removed and replaced because it had her last name as Hacking on it. They replaced it with their Portuguese name, Filha, which means little daughter. Because, you know, why would they want his last name on their loved one's headstone?
According to Thelma, who was doing an interview by phone, she said Mark didn't want her anymore. She doesn't need to have his last name on her tombstone.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/genY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/genY.
Lori's mother, Thelma, says she no longer feels the anger she once did, and actually exchanges letters with her son-in-law. I mean, this is 10 years plus after her daughter's murder. She has shared some of these letters with the newspapers in her area, and she's forgiven him.
And I think really what's going on here is it's for her own peace of mind. She can't deal well with knowing what happened to her daughter, how this went down. She's trying to find as much peace as she can, which it doesn't sound like a lot. And yet she still wants to know why. Now, according to news reports, Mark Hacking was encouraged by his own father to write down his thoughts, write down his life story. Mark did just that. He apparently wrote a book. I don't know how many pages it is, but he gave copies to his family and I believe to Lori's mother. It's, I guess, to clear the air, to let them know why things happened the way they did. This book is not out. You can't go to Amazon. You can go to Amazon and find a book on this case, but it's not the one he wrote. So maybe for the families, they have maybe more information. Then again, it's also said that he may have sold things to murderabilia sites, which we've discussed that in the past. I think if you are a murderer and you're trying to say that you feel remorseful, you can't say that with a straight face while we know that you may have sold items to a murderabilia website. It just seems wrong to possibly profit in some way or to get some additional notoriety because of what you did. It's terrible. Now, Justin, we were talking about this case and you said, I don't think this is as simple as he hit his head and then he started to develop problems, or he was lying and the lies snowballed and then he had a murder to cover it up. You think this was something that was a part of him from a long time before. It was just part of his makeup and it just happened to culminate in this way because of the situation. But he was a scammer from a long way back.
I think that when you look at his family and his background, you see a very affluent family. His parents are doctors. His siblings are doctors in the medical field. One of them, I think, works for the Department of Homeland Defense. They're all extremely successful people, extremely motivated. They're tight-knit. And then you have Mark. By all counts, is kind of a loser.
Great personality, but apparently not destined for success.
No. And so he's an attention seeker, and that might be compensating for the rest of his family being very successful. He barely makes it out of high school. He flunks out of college. But while he's in college, he goes on a missionary trip to Canada where he's sent home early. Because he screwed up, but he doesn't tell his parents. And Lori, his girlfriend, I think at the time, even kind of helps cover up for him. And then he literally for years says he's going to college and he's not going. And he's hanging out with friends and he's playing video games. And then he goes on to say he's going to med school. He's bought books. He's bought all these things to show that he's going.
They're essentially props, really, because he's not going.
Yeah.
It's all a lie.
Also, when he graduated college from the University of Utah, or when he claims he did, Lori and her family were going to go to his graduation. And he said he couldn't make it because he was sick. He was throwing up. He said he caught a bug or something. He had a cap and gown. He had all of these things lined up to show that he was graduating that day. But, oh, you can't go to the ceremony because I'm sick. Oh, what a terrible thing. So they took him outside and took a picture of him in his cap and gown outside the house to congratulate him for graduating from a university he never went to. That's how cunning he was. He'd done all these things, and he's done this all his life to seek attention and seek possibly confirmation from his family. When your whole family's so successful, I'm sure that puts a lot of pressure on you to be successful too, perceived or otherwise. I don't think his family put pressure on him. I think they would have loved him no matter what. He thinks that he has to be at that level. If he would have taken all this effort and actually applied it to just going to college, my God. He'd probably be a very successful person.
Or at least he'd make it. You know, and that's the thing is, you were saying you didn't think his family, they didn't need him to be a success. Just be happy. But not everybody sees things that way. You know, it's, I have to keep up with the Joneses, or in this case, the Hackings, and he just couldn't. So for him, the only way to deal with it was to lie. The truth is, Mark couldn't hack it. Even after they knew that he had killed Lori, they wanted him to turn himself in, but they were still supportive of him. They still helped him. He had to get a lawyer. He had to file things. Whatever was going on, they were there for him. And of course, they were also there for Lori's family. They did what they could and, you know, just said, you know, we want to be supportive of you. We feel terrible. And when it came to burying Lori, Thelma Soares made sure that the Hackings were invited. They were allowed to be there every step of the way. If there was a remembrance or a burial, whatever it was, they were invited. And so it's amazing that these families that got along so well, even after Mark confessed to the murder of Lori, the families were still there for each other. And there was just that respect.
Absolutely. I mean, this is my bro science. I'm not a psychologist or anything, but I don't think him landing on his head years prior is going to correlate to him planning a murder of his wife after she's threatening to leave him because of all the lies, because he's now destroyed her life. She has quit her job and she's going to uproot across country all based on a lie. And then she's saying, I'm not going with you now, or we're going to separate, or you're never going to see your kid again. Who knows?
I didn't see the whole letter, but what I got out of it was she was like, how the hell did we have a life together? You've lied about everything. Where are we going to go from here? We're not moving for a lie. So we have to sort this out. Imagine if there was pressure before from, oh, all my siblings, my parents are all successes and I'm a nobody, I'm a loser. And now his own wife is saying, you've screwed everything up. She didn't deserve to be murdered. I certainly don't think his head injury had anything to do with this because he was functional. He just didn't do the work he needed to do. He cut corners. He lied. He played video games instead of attending university. So he created this whole lie. I think that's why the oxygen special is called A Lie to Die For, is because some people lie their way into murder because they see no other way to deal with the situation. It literally becomes a crisis point and they have nowhere else to go. Now, you and I talked about it. There are many choices he had. He could have said, I know I screwed up. I know I need to start over. Whether you leave me or if you'll stick it out, I need to prove myself. He didn't do that because he didn't answer the call because he never has. He never had to.
And now he's being called out for it. Essentially, it was inevitable that he was going to be outed eventually. I mean, he's going to go to a non-existent med school thing. And like, how long was this going to go on for? Lori was going to bring this all crushing down on him before he would ever be ready for it. So he thought killing her and then reporting her missing was going to do something.
I don't think he ever actually had a plan other than I'm ashamed. And the person who has brought it to my attention, who now realizes what's going on, needs to be silenced. That's it.
He wasn't thinking more than a day ahead.
No, I don't think so. Because, yeah, where do you go from here? Again, the best way to deal with all of your lies is just to come clean and then beg for forgiveness, beg for a second chance, whatever. He didn't do that. At least I don't get the sense that he ever did that. And especially if you're turning to murder as your next step. Yeah, that's not a plan. That's a reaction. And a poor one at that. So this is something he has to live with the rest of his life. And no matter how many people have said, we'll call you, we talk to you. You know, his family has continued to talk with him. But he's in prison. And everybody knows he's a murderer. He murdered his pregnant wife. She was 27 years old. She had her whole life ahead of her. Her 28-year-old husband had nothing to offer her except for lies and then murder.
Thank God he was so terrible at it. I think of that true crime meme where it's like sitting on my couch eating cheesy fries when the narrator on the true crime show says, and they left their fingerprints on the doorknob, and you go, idiot. I mean, this guy, every step of the way, left all the evidence. I mean, he used a credit card to buy the mattress. Her purse and keys are at the apartment. There's blood in the apartment. He dumps the stuff in dumpsters that are just a block away from his apartment. I'm glad he was stupid, but he's like one of the dumbest murderers we've ever covered.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.